This is Taming Emotional and Social Eating Gremlins presentation for the Green Cleanse. And the reason for taming the emotional eating and social eating gremlins is so that you can just really love the body that you're in, so that you can be eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full, and only eating because you need the nourishment, not for entertainment and not for social and not for emotional support and comfort. And it's a common thing. We've learned to do it from when we were very, very little. And I will say that it gets in the way and it thwarts the success of so many people in reviving and recovering their health. So as you know, I'm Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and I just love leading this cleanse, and I look forward to sharing this great information with you. And the information I'm sharing is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional, and it's certainly not medical advice. It's just intended as a sharing from my knowledge base, my skill base, my research, and my clinical experience to you in the environment of education. And I expect that if you're under the care of any doctor, that you run any of these instructions, any of these recommendations by your doctor before putting them into place. So by the time we get to the end of the cleanse, it's a great thing to celebrate a new you after the cleanse. Maybe you have a slightly lighter body. Maybe you have a slightly flatter tummy. Maybe you have more energy or a clearer mind. Maybe you're finally figuring out what foods agree with you and what don't. And we want that to last. And oftentimes it doesn't last. Oftentimes it's easy to just slip back into the old patterns of eating that stem from emotions and social. There's very few reasons I hear for people going off a plan that they know works for them other than social eating and emotional eating. So if you've ever experienced emotional eating, meaning eating for reasons other than hunger, eating because you're sad or you're frustrated or you're angry, or you've ever eaten for social reasons, like, okay, I'm just going to eat this with my friends. We're all out for pizza. That's what I'm going to eat, just because I want to socialize, even though it's not the best choice for you. So can it last? Yes, it can last. But what you need to do is get in touch with the reasons you eat and the reasons that you choose foods sometimes that may not be the best for you. So there's all sorts of excuses for veering off course. Holidays. Talk to people and they say, well, then the Christmas holidays came around, and then the Easter holidays came around, and then Valentine's Day came around. Truth of the matter is, if you wait for all the holidays to be over before you continue with good eating, you're never going to have good eating, right? Because there's holidays all throughout the year, and then they start all over again. What about your birthday? I've had people say to me, come on, have some cake. It's your birthday. Treat yourself. Personally, I look at them and say, treat myself? I'm going to eat foods that I know are going to make me sick and not make me feel good and maybe damage the insides of my body because it's my birthday? Heck no. Maybe your friends are in town. Well, when my friends are back out of town, I'll start eating right again. Nope. When your friends are in town, you can treat your friends. You can make food for your friends. You can go to places that are very amenable to where you can get a good, healthy meal and your friends can eat however they want. Well, your sister's birthday or your mother's birthday or your father's birthday or your boyfriend's birthday. If you're anything like me, you know hundreds of people who have birthdays. And if you waited for all of their birthdays to be passed before you get started on staying on the course that you started here in the Green Cleanse, you're not going to get back to it. And then, of course, the special party. I've heard the one about my daughter's wedding, right? The bridal shower, the baby shower. Truth of the matter is there's celebrations all along. And we just need to get in touch with the fact that food is nourishment. And yeah, we want it to taste good. That's a nice thing. But really, it's about the food being part of our body and turning into part of our body. So I've not heard this one before, but the president's birthday, right? It's the president's birthday. No, I gotta wait. And of course, vacation's a biggie. and whenever we go on vacation, it's for me, I end up usually losing weight when I go on vacation because the places that are we frequent don't have much of, you know, foods I could keep the calories on, and I end up eating, you know, mainly salads and vegetables. So vacation does not have to be an excuse, and there's ways to go on vacation and eat wonderfully, especially if you travel and you go to condos or some of these suites hotels that have refrigerators and little kitchen areas. So it's not that hard. And in today's world, it's not that hard at all. When I first started doing this, my first cleanse was in 1985. That was a long time ago. That was over 30 years ago. I find it hard to believe it was that long ago, but it was over 30 years ago. Back then, it was hard if you went on vacation. It was hard to go out and eat. And people looked at you like you were nuts. But now there's so much awareness that it's not that hard if you just look up in the phone book, you ask around. You can usually find restaurants that cater to gluten-free or dairy-free, allergies, even chains like when we travel. Chipotle is a great chain that we go to. And if you're not in the U.S., obviously that's not going to mean anything, but that's a restaurant. It's become a kind of fast food restaurant, but they serve organic foods. They serve organic meats, and then they serve really good, you know, salads with guacamole and brown rice and beans. And there's a lot of things that you can get there as a fast food place. Maybe not foods that you would normally eat, but certainly decent foods. We've even gone to a place called Macaroni Grill, which is a chain of a little bit higher end restaurants. And they have a gluten-free menu and they have lots of veggies. So it's not that hard. But here's the gremlins that I think sabotage your health. When you eat emotionally, not for nourishment, but for emotional appeasement and pacification, you tend to overeat and you eat the wrong kinds of foods. It's health threatening. Social eating. When you eat what's in front of you because somebody put it in front of you, instead of standing up to your values and saying, nope, that's not good for me, no, thank you, or not saying anything and just leaving it on the plate. Being busy is a biggie. And when people say to me, I'm too busy to eat well, I'm too busy to continue to do this elimination diet, I'm too busy, blah, blah, blah. I look at them and I say, do you think you're any more busy than me? And they usually will say, no. I'm the busiest person I know, constantly busy, and I find a way. And there's shortcuts and cleansing. During this green cleanse, making smoothies and soups is one of those. And there's lots of ways. I don't spend on a regular basis, I don't spend more than 5 or 10 minutes putting a meal together. Now, you see me on the shows and you see me in the videos, and I'm making all kinds of, you know, fancier foods, which is fine. They're still quick if you watch it. I am specializing in making quick and easy food. And eating whole fresh foods makes it a lot easier because you don't have to open it up, you don't have to cook it, you just have to eat it. And lack of focus and also lack of commitment. When you are not focused on eating as a primary way for you to be more productive, as a primary way for you to stay healthier, you're not focused on it. You're not going to make good choices. And all of the poor choices are threatening your health and well-being. So how do you know if you're an emotional eater? So if you've ever eaten emotionally in your life, you've ever turned to food for comfort, you've ever turned to food and eaten food in a social setting that you don't think is 100% good for you, raise your hand. I'm putting my hand up. My hand's going up because I've done it. I've for sure done it. So important stuff. So how do you know if you're an emotional eater or if you have a tendency to eat emotionally? When you feel an uncontrollable urge to eat, even when you're not hungry. Like say, you know, you get frustrated because your boss just gave you a new project and you were hoping that you were going to leave early today, or you just found out that the stock market's not in good shape and your finances are going down, or you just got fired, or your mother's sick, or whatever, and you just feel like you want to eat to stuff that emotion. That's emotional eating. An uncontrollable urge to eat even when you're not hungry. Or you're watching a commercial or you're at the movies and you see other people eating and you have an urge to eat even when you're not hungry. It's an emotional thing or a social thing. You know you're an emotional eater if you eat foods to soothe an emotional wound without regard to actual nourishment. It's it's like, oh, I don't feel good. I don't care how good it is for me. I'm just going to eat the apple pie. And yeah, the apple pie does distract you, doesn't it, for about 3 minutes, maybe five. But once you've swallowed it, you have the guilt about eating the apple pie, plus oftentimes your belly hurts. So emotional eating doesn't pay off. I used to eat emotionally, and what I would do is I would take a big mixing bowl, not a dessert bowl, but a big mixing bowl, and I'd fill it with ice cream, and then I'd put like Hershey syrup on it, and then I'd put whipped cream from one of those cans. I'd spray on the whipped cream, and then I'd load it up with other kinds of chocolate chips and sprinkles and everything else. Huge bowl, and I would sit down and eat the whole thing. It's a wonder I didn't become 300 pounds. It was the reason I didn't become 300 pounds is because I was so obsessed about not gaining weight that after I'd do stuff like that, I would like fast on just one bagel and one cup of yogurt for 4 or 5 days. Not the best foods for me, but it helped me to maintain my weight. I admit it. I was an emotional eater. I still sometimes turn to food emotionally. I find myself doing it. And oftentimes I could stop myself, but not 100% of the time. I remember getting upset with something my son did. You know, he's a teenager and they do crazy stuff. And I was like frustrated and feeling out of control. And I walked past this box on the counter, which never appeals to me in general. But I picked out one of my B4 bars and I grabbed it and I was like, and I started to run away and started to rip it open. I'm like, what are you doing? Do you really think that eating this bar is going to change your son's behavior? So it's a matter of getting in touch with those things. Eating for entertainment, right? On Thanksgiving, or you go out after the ball game, or you go out after work and you have the pizza and beer. And a lot of times that late night eating has nothing to do with hunger and everything to do with just entertainment. That's an emotional eater. And you know you're out of control. Whenever you're feeling yourself distraught, frustrating, upset, and angry, and you just want it to stop, you just want the pain and discomfort to stop. So you reach for whatever junk food is handy at the moment, a candy bar, ice cream, chocolate chip cookies, whatever is there, and you shove it in your face. And without regard for the pleasure, because at that point when you're shoveling food in, you don't even have the time to make it pleasurable. And it's not your fault. It started when you were a kid. And it was so innocent, right? The little girl, she breaks, falls down and scrapes her knee, and mommy says, everything's going to be okay. Here's a lollipop. Yeah? Or, oh, I'm so excited for you. You pooped on the potty. Here's some M&Ms. So we learn to associate it reward and comfort with food. And it becomes a problem. We have a whole child obesity epidemic. And for those who didn't become obese as a child, it becomes problematic as an adult when you're trying to deal with health challenges and you know the right things to eat, but you keep getting derailed. There's a lot of things that contribute to emotional eating. One of those is what I call toxic emotions. And some of these you may look at and say, well, what's toxic about that? It just is. But it's focusing on it. So sadness, it's not really a toxic emotion, but it's an emotion that can lead to eating. Now, sadness in the regards of, you know, somebody just died, you lost your job, somebody moved away, you know, there's sadness that's normal. But when you don't want to tolerate and feel that sadness, and you jump into eating to make it go away, then it becomes toxic. But other emotions, they just tend to be toxic, like hate. I mean, I know there's some bad people in the world, and I know there's people that do you injustice, but hate is really strong. Shame is another one. We go about shaming ourselves. We feel bad because we're not perfect, and we shame ourselves. Jealousy. Right? That person has something I don't have and I'm jealous of what they have. Hopelessness, that's a really toxic emotion. We get into that state of not being able to see the bright side, of not being able to see the positive and the hope and the possibility. We get into that state of hopelessness and it's extremely toxic and very often leads to emotional eating. I associate hopelessness with depression as well. Very much people eat when they're feeling depressed. What about self-righteousness? I think self-righteousness is a toxic emotion, like, I'm right, you're wrong, I'm the authority, and don't speak to me. And that alienates you from people. And then there's a loneliness associated with self-righteousness. Worry, I think, is one of the most toxic emotions there are. Like, if I waste my cycles worrying about something that didn't even happen yet and acting as if it did happen, what good is that doing me? I bought my husband a coaster and it says, worry is the waste of a good imagination. And I believe that. You can conjure up all these stories of what might happen if you do this and what might happen if the squirrel drops down from the tree and lands on your car and then it bounces off and then it causes you to swerve and then you get in an accident and hit the tree. There are people who play those scenarios out. You might be one of them. And maybe not as ridiculous as the squirrel falling down from the tree, but there's so much of that. Worry is a waste of a good imagination. Worry is also, it's almost like somebody described this to me once. I'm trying to get the right words. It's like you pay your mortgage twice. You pay your mortgage before you even get into the house. You're paying it in advance. That's what worry is. You're paying with your body, with your all the toll that it takes on your body. Greed is another toxic emotion. Enough's enough. We have to know when's enough's enough. And I was at a workshop over the weekend, and a friend shared a story that she heard from an Indian tribe in South America. And these people are very peaceful. They're very happy. And they said, the women are the ones that tell the men to stop. So the men go out and they hunt and they fish. They cut down trees to just bring back for the family. But they don't do it. They don't keep doing it. They do it until the women say, stop, we have enough. And they said that, you know, when they look at the U.S., that we are so much greed and so much like, you know, take this and, you know, oil, mining the earth for oil and ruining areas and the cutting down the rainforest for grazing land for cattle and just the money, the pursuit of money. And this woman said to my friend, she said, I want you to bring back the message that the women need to be saying that's enough. What's happening to the women? Why are they not telling the men that that's enough? Now, that's a little parable, but it brings it home. Greed can create so much toxicity. I want that and I want that and I want that. And not just being there in the place of what you have and being appreciative of what you have. And yeah, it's nice to want for more. But greed is what makes Monsanto keep creating pesticides and GMOs and ruining our food supply because they get to make more money. And it ruins our society. And greed is a toxic emotion. If you're feeling that, then that might lead you to emotional eating because you might be feeling guilt over that. Anger is another one. You know, justifiable anger is one thing, but the rage that goes on, just allowing yourself to get angry and hurtful towards people, toxic. And then guilt, right? Whoops, I did that and I shouldn't have done that. Just let it go. Let it go. All of these things can lead to emotional eating. I'm going to share with you how you can figure out what's leading to your own emotional eating. So what we're going to do in terms of an emotional eating strategy is we want to reprogram the pattern. You want to identify what the triggers are and then establish strategies for handling them and then create new neural pathways in your brain and then rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, those same three steps. That allows you to break free. It seems simple, it seems easy, but it's not. But even though it's not easy, it's doable and it's well worth it. Okay? So I'm going to share with you a little bit more detail on each of those steps. So here's the first step, which is identify the triggers. Emotional eating strategy. How do you identify the triggers? Well, the first thing I would do is make a list. And you can start to do this now on the call so you've got half the work done. List the foods that soothe your emotional pain. What is it that you reach for? For me, it was usually ice cream. Was it ice cream? Is it bread? Is it Coke? What is it for you? Now go through and identify the foods that you find addictive. What does that mean? Well, if you eat a piece of bread, are you craving more bread? If you eat some crackers, are you craving more crackers, or do you allow your body to naturally flow into the space where it says enough? So once you've identified some of those foods that you find are addictive, I want you to explore the circumstances that trigger the emotional eating. In other words, name the emotions that are most likely to trigger you to soothe the food. So, for example, you have a list now of the foods that you turn to. So say it's, you know, pancakes is one of the foods. What emotion is most likely going to trigger yourself to feel the need to soothe yourself with food? Is it shame? Is it disappointment? And what circumstances? First, we're going to do the circumstances. What circumstances? So, wow, every time my mother comes to visit, as soon as she leaves, I reach for the cookie jar. Or something like, whenever my boss walks in the office and has that look on his face, I start to go into that state. So what are the circumstances that trigger your emotional eating? And then what specific emotions are most likely to cause yourself to soothe with food? Okay. So we're going to go through some of those now. We're going to go through that and help you put together a plan. So now you've got the foods that you use to soothe yourself, the circumstances that trigger the emotional eating. My sister came over. My daughter came over. Whatever that might be. Name the emotions that are most likely to trigger you to soothe with food. So let's do this as an exercise. Let's have you recall the most recent emotional eating episode that you had, whether it be sitting at the table and you just kept filling up your bowl and filling up your bowl and filling up your bowl, or whether it be a specific situation that, you know, happened at work, that happened at school. So just think of what happened in your most recent emotional eating episode. What caused it? Was it fear, frustration, anger, despair, insecurity, loneliness, or this one, which is, was it feeling like you're not good enough? If you've ever felt like, I'm just not good enough, I'm just not smart enough, I'm just not pretty enough, just not compassionate enough, and that caused you to have an emotional eating episode, it's very common. Even those of us who are seemingly in very, you know, good positions have that feeling from time to time. I've certainly had that feeling quite a bit, not feeling good enough. But did somebody say something that caused you to feel like you were a small child who couldn't do anything right? You know, was it your mother who still thinks of you as being 5 years old? And she said something and it was critical, a criticism. So ponder these questions. I want to just talk a little bit about the sad truth about emotional eating. Here's the deal. You have this toxic emotion. You think about eating. Oh, yeah, I'm just going to have that Oreo cookie or that chocolate bar or whatever it might be. Food can distract you for a little while. So you sit there and you eat. It might take you 5, 10, 15 minutes to eat. And after that 15 minutes is over, how do you feel? You often feel like, oh my God, I caved again. Oh my God, I said I wasn't going to do this anymore. And you criticize yourself. You might have that good feeling for a little while, but then it goes right back to that and worse than where it started from. When you're in the middle of one of these emotional episodes, it doesn't matter how much logic you apply, you're still going to want to figure out a way to get that cookie. So really sit with this, and we're going to put together a little strategy for you. I have a couple of ways that I love to teach to help you get out of your lizard brain. Let me explain what that means. the more primitive part of your brain in the back part of your brain, the hind brain, technically called the limbic system, but I like to call it the lizard brain, because that part of the brain knows how to do two things very well. Fight or flee. Fight or flight, fight or flee. So when you're confronted with a toxic situation, a situation that's perceived as a stress, your body doesn't necessarily differentiate that that stress is real or perceived, that there really is a tiger chasing you and you have to get out of the way, because this non-physical stress can cause the same sort of a response. So what we've done is created some things. One is what I call the portable anchor system. And what that is some way to trigger you to get out of the lizard brain. Because the opposite part of the brain is the forebrain. I call it the wizard brain. It's called the prefrontal cortex. And you want to get out of your lizard brain and into your wizard brain. And just telling yourself to do it doesn't help, because when you're in that state, you can't hear it, right? So a portable anchor system might be a little index card or a sticky note where you've written a note to call someone, okay, to do something that's non-food related. So that shifts you into a relaxed mode. When you can just like go, oh, and you put something down that's meaningful for you, that helps you to get out of it. When you can read, you can bring yourself out of it. And the other thing you can do with portable anchors is put little sticky notes around your house, reminding you of those things that you want to be doing. So it obviously shifts everything into a relaxed mode. And relaxed brains make logical comparisons and informed choices. So if you're sitting there and you're stressed and you're not in your parasympathetic nervous system, you're not operating from your prefrontal cortex, your wizard brain, what you're going to do is you're not going to be able to shift yourself out of that emotional state, because you're in it. And the part of you that's thinking for you right then is the part that doesn't have the control. So what you want to do is be able to get yourself into that relaxed mode. Look at one of your portable anchors, an index card, and read it, and that will help you to shift. Now, will it help you to shift permanently all day long? I don't know. But the more you do it, the better it's going to be. Okay, so lizards can't compare and contrast. Lizards can't look at the situation and say, oh, Sarah, it's time to make a good choice here. Don't go eat a Hostess Ding Dong right now. Why don't you call Mary and ask her to just listen to you? Why don't you go draw a picture? Why don't you go in the hot tub? Lots of possibilities for other stuff you could do. But when you're in the throes of it, you generally don't hear it. So we want to create new neural pathways. Neural pathways are connections between the nerves, the neurons in your brain. And a lot of things get pre-programmed because you do them a lot, so that the brain doesn't have to wire the whole thing through each time. So if you want to do something a little bit differently, you have to pause. You have to pause long enough to start a dialogue with yourself. So there's a technique called freeze frame, where you've got this event that's happening and you want to reprogram it. So right now, say every time you get upset about something, you know, whether it be with your boss, whether it be with your mom, whether it be with your sister, there's a program in there that says, upset with mom, reach for cookie. It's there. It's been programmed. The only way you're going to unprogram it is to create something that's stronger than it, that's associated with the same stimulus. So stimulus is mom's yelling at me. Response is eat a cookie. So you have to tie in a different response to the same stimulus. That's what's going to get you forward in this. So you've got to think about, what are those things that I can do to soothe myself without having to reach for food? Maybe it's go for a swim. Maybe it's sit in a bathtub. Maybe it's spray lavender oil on you. There's a lot of possibilities. So you want to be able to do something just a little different, pause just long enough to start a dialogue with yourself. And that dialogue is asking questions. So for example, you pause, you take some deep breaths, that in and of itself starts to relax you, and then you ask, what's a more resourceful way to respond to this stimulus right now? And if you've thought of some of these in advance, like maybe you've written down some of your favorite things, like reading a book or doing a crossword puzzle or playing Tetris or going for a walk or calling a friend, you know that that's there. And ask yourself honest questions. What could those honest questions be? Right? How can I do this differently? How can I preserve this relationship while communicating my feelings? And then you do is sit quietly, like I just did, that pause, that kind of pregnant pause, and you listen. And oftentimes you get a message from your subconscious, and maybe it's not words that says, oh, you can say this, or oh, you can do this, but it might be an image or a color that helps you. And then you want to intercept at the first sign of danger. So you want to be able to look for, okay, I've been associating that every time I spend the afternoon with mom, I go back and emotionally eat. How can you protect yourself before you enter that situation? Can you look at that situation and maybe it's a certain type of interaction and shift away from that? Okay. Or have some, you know, pleasant music that you can play. Or find an activity you could do. Okay, so that's it for creating new neural pathways. And after a while, those new neural pathways will get involved. So here's some ideas. Maybe some of these will work for you, maybe some of them won't. But there's comforting actions to replace comforting food. Comforting actions to replace comforting food. So you can take a hot bath with lavender oil instead of scarfing down a whole pizza. Not better for your waistline and for all the rest of you. You can listen to meditative music. You can listen to an inspirational speaker. You can call a friend. So you can journal to express and release your feelings. You can lose yourself in a favorite hobby. You can express gratitude. What a great way. This is one of the most powerful ways that you can shift yourself out of that emotional state, expressing gratitude. You can also visualize a place and time that brought you pleasure. So, emotional eating worksheet. So print this out. You have copies of the slides. Print this out. And answer these questions. What are the feelings, circumstances, or problems that trigger you to eat emotionally? What are they? What are the particular circumstances and how do you feel in those circumstances? Name the foods you generally eat as a result. So go ahead and do that right now. What foods do you eat? How do you feel physically after eating these foods? Do you feel good? Do you feel energized? Do you feel a little bloated or gassy? Do you feel headachy? Be honest with yourself. How do you feel emotionally after eating these foods? Do you feel like joy and bliss and comfort? Or do you feel guilt and remorse? It's an important piece. So what can you do instead to soothe the negative emotions? And then as a result of the alternative activity, how do you feel? So say you decide that instead of when I'm feeling upset because my mom just yelled at me, I'm going to do to choose instead of reaching for the cookies, I am going to choose to take a hot lavender bath. So that could be the thing you do to soothe the negative emotions. Or maybe it's just pull out lavender tincture and start to smell or some other tincture that you might like. And as a result of doing that, how do you feel now? So this is a sheet that you can fill out, and this is what you can create as your personal emotional eating strategy. So you've already done the activity on the previous page. So you just type or write in here, when I feel what emotions. So when I feel sad and angry, it drives me to eat chocolate chip cookies and ice cream. After that, I usually kind of feel bloated, gassy. and I have the symptoms of. So I may feel this way emotionally. Actually, the bloating and gassy is physical. So I may feel remorseful. I may feel blissful, whatever that is. And I have the symptoms. What kind of symptoms do you get after you go on an emotional eating binge? What does it keep you from achieving? It's very important to know. So instead of reaching for these foods, I can, what can you do instead? I know one person does this a lot. I can enjoy reading. I can enjoy going for a little bit of a hike. And as a result, what are you going to feel, both physical and emotional? So this is a strategy you can do. I would highly recommend you print this out, and then you start filling it in. So let's look at a social eating strategy. We're almost done here. Social eating strategy. One of my favorites is eat before you go out. Don't go out to a restaurant or to a party with your friends when you're starving. You're going to make bad choices. It's just plain and simple. So eat before you go. Have a smoothie before you go to fill you up. Bring some food along. Bring a bag of nuts or seeds or veggie sticks or something. Bring food along either for just you to eat or something you can share with the host. Stay connected with your vision. Important. If you lose sight of your vision, you lose sight of where you're at, where you want to be, there's no impetus for continuing. Envision yourself staying true to you and who you are. There's nothing like it. And then write this, copy this emotional eating strategy and copy it onto a 3x5 or 4x6 card. Okay, carry it with you. And learn the language of nonviolent communication to let your needs be known. What does that mean, the language of nonviolent communication? Well, there's a whole series of books by a fellow named Marshall Rosenberg. And he has written these books on how do you communicate what you need without making it about them, without saying, you hurt my feelings. When you did that, I felt sad. It's important that you let your needs be known, but it's also important that you do it in a way that doesn't create chaos in your body. And I would highly recommend, if you're having issues with this, check out Nonviolent Communication. They have lots of videos on YouTube. There's just type in nonviolent communication. There's a really good 3-hour long one that's, you know, if you got the time to watch it. It teaches you ways to communicate in ways that your needs can be heard and the person is not feeling affronted and they're going to grant you what you need. It's not manipulation, nonviolent communication, and it's awesome. So busy people out there, who's busy? Who's busier than I am? Let's take a vote. Couple of things. You can do what we like to call grab and go. In our Before Be Gone program, we have a thing called the grab and go, where you make a bunch of food up in advance and you have it to grab. So maybe you cut up some vegetables, wash them and stuff, and you have different ones laid out for different meals. And then you use nuts and seeds and then possibly other things like avocados and stuff. So you basically make the food in advance and people love it. So another way to do it is to bring along some crackers of some sort, a portable meal, all right? If you go to work, you can have some crackers and dip. And I'm not talking about, you know, Ritz crackers. I'm talking about there's really good Living Foods crackers. There's some gluten-free ones that are actually quite decent, like Mary's Gone crackers. Bring those along for a portable meal. So I like to carry green food or drinks with me. I like to carry little packets of green like green powders. I carry little packets of protein powder. So if I'm stuck, like in an airport and my plane is late and I was expecting to get there in an hour or two and it's like way, way beyond and I'm hungry, it's really hard to get good food at the airport. Although some are getting better. San Francisco has some nice places. Okay. So carry those packets of things. So you can always buy a bottle of water and stick them in and have a meal replacement to hold you over. You can also use things like seeds or nuts in a little Ziploc bag, or you can get some bars. The only one I'm highly recommending is my own, and not to be self-serving, but the reason I developed it is because it's the only bar out there that you can grab for that's got high omega-3s, no sugar added, low sugar in the natural ingredients, so only 2 grams in the whole bar, and then spirulina, chlorella, hemp, coconut, things like that. So you can get a bar. You can get little packets. Before I leave on a trip, I will fill up these little baggies, you know, and sometimes I make serving size portions even if I'm home, or I make a big batch of smoothies in advance. So there's so many ways that you can do it. And when you are on the road and you're busy, the best fast food on the run is to grab an avocado and some cherry tomatoes, pre-cut vegetables, hummus, awesome stuff. You don't have to fall whims to the social eating stuff. So everything starts with your vision. So your vision is important. So important. You create your vision. You connect with your vision. You've got to fall in love with your vision. Because if you're not in love with your vision and something steers you away from it, like chocolate chip cookies, if your vision's not stronger than chocolate chip cookies, you're going to keep going for the chocolate chip cookies. My vision is so much bigger than chocolate chip cookies. I gave them up 30 years ago. My vision is so much bigger than ice cream. I gave that up 30 years ago. So create your vision. Important first step. Connect with your vision. Fall in love with your vision. Remember your vision every single day and allow it to be the guiding force in your life. Thank you very much for listening.